grabbed on tight. That was when I left my body for good, and I shook off all the strength I'd earned.
Chapter 2.
I wanted so badly not to be me. I wanted so badly not to be me. Where did I leave that fire? Where did I leave that fire?
It's been hours. Steve isn't sure how long exactly. The private high-security medical wing they have Bucky in is in an interior part of the tower with no windows, and Steve can't be bothered to find a clock. But it was nearly midnight when Jarvis had given them the alert. And even without a window to show the sun rising, Steve is distantly aware of the tower waking up, of the lower floors filling with the various employees of Stark Industries filtering into their offices and labs. It's an internalized thing, developed out of habit and instinct. He can't actually see or hear any of it from where he sits, and the quiet is almost oppressive, but he can't will himself to move either. In front of him, on the other side of a clear glass wall, Bucky lies on a pristine hospital bed. The soft, steady beep of the heart rate monitor is the only sound to disturb them, and Bucky is motionless, but for the rise and fall of his chest, still deeply asleep. There have been a myriad of doctors coming and going, all specialists, top of their fields, and thoroughly background checked and sworn to confidentiality, kept on retainer for any medical emergencies that might arise that the Avengers can't trust to a public hospital. They've done checks, drawn blood, and scanned Bucky from every angle with every machine at their disposal. Bruce runs herd on them, since although he isn't actually a medical doctor, he has had enough training, and more importantly, is the closest thing they have to an expert on the serum and Bucky's particular case. He tried to explain to Steve what they were doing, the purpose and methods of the various tests, but Steve is too worn out and numb with shock to really process any of it. Bruce will explain the relevant results later, and that's all that matters. Eventually, the doctors had run out of tests to do, and withdrawn to their various labs and offices to analyze and discuss the results. They'd ensured that Bucky is comfortable, hooked up to an IV drip of saline fluids, basic nutrients, and the specialized sedative formula to keep him under for now, and then left. Only Steve remains. He could go into the room. He could sit beside the bed and hold Bucky's hand and constantly remind himself that all of this is real. And yet, he can't bring himself to. The front wall of the room, like Tony's workshop and many of the labs in the tower, is a thick, clear glass, and Steve can see into the room without actually entering it. So he stays outside, slumped on the floor with his back against the far wall and his knees drawn up to his chest, staring at Bucky. It's been well over 24 hours since Steve slept, and his eyes are heavy with grit. His body feels numb and distant, and he thinks if his body felt any heavier, he would sink right through the floor. It takes him a full minute to process the steaming mug that appears in front of his face. The scent of fancy roasted coffee beans and thick curls of steam rise from the mug, which is fire engine red, and sports the words, "The early bird is also a smug piece of shit." Slowly, Steve reaches up and takes it, cupping it in both of his hands. The serum metabolizes caffeine just as easily as it does alcohol, but the ceramic of the mug is warm and grounding against his palms, and the scent is reassuringly familiar. He doesn't drink it, just cradles it close to his chest, and blinks slowly at Bucky. Sam sinks down onto the carpet next to Steve, cradling his own mug of coffee as he stretches his legs out across the hallway. Neither of them speak for several long minutes, letting the comfortable silence linger between them. It's only when Steve takes a deep drink of the coffee that he realizes distantly that his hands are shaking. "So," Sam says eventually, breaking the silence. "The police report says he was banging on the door and shouting to be let in." Steve swallows his coffee and lowers the cup back down to cradle it against his chest. "He was looking for his ma," he says quietly, the hint of Brooklyn coming out in his tired tone. He feels Sam's head turn sharply to look at him, but he keeps his eyes on Bucky, letting Sam stare at him unacknowledged.
"Was he in the right place?"
Sam asks after a pause.
"No," Steve says, but shrugs. "He was close. Close enough, I guess. He wouldn't have recognized the right street anyway. It's a strip mall now."
Sam makes a considering noise and turns his attention back to the still figure on the bed in front of them.
"Guess that explains something,"
Sam offers.
"He could have ripped that door off its hinges easy, or found a window to go in through. He didn't. The cops just figured he was drunk until they gave him a breathalyzer."
"He knew me this time," Steve says. It's still like a punch in the gut, remembering the look of utter relief that had crossed Bucky's face when he'd seen Steve.
"Improvement,"
Sam comments. His voice is dry, but sincere. It is an improvement. They found Bucky and brought him in, willingly and without violence, which was more than any of them had really dared hope for. They sit in silence for several more minutes, and Steve finishes his coffee in slow, shaky sips. Bucky doesn't stir.
"They're going to keep him under until tomorrow at least,"
Sam says eventually, gently reclaiming the now empty cup from Steve's loose fingers.
"You should go get some rest. You look like shit."
Steve lets out a soft huff that imitates a laugh, automatic and utterly insincere. But he accepts the hand up that Sam offers him, and forces his body to move enough to lever himself to his feet without risking pulling Sam over for trying to help. He trails Sam without protest to the elevator, only looking back at Bucky's still form once before the doors close between them. Sam pauses, his fingers hovering uncertainly over the buttons of the elevator, and it takes Steve a minute to realize the problem. Steve, like all of the Avengers, has a suite in the upper floors of the tower, but he's barely been in it in months, not since he started spending most of his nights in Tony's penthouse. Steve blinks at the elevator panel, stomach twisting, and Sam watches him, waiting uncertainly. Slowly, Steve reaches out and decisively presses the button for his own floor. Tony hadn't been subtle about the way he kept his distance, both in physicality and mannerism since they'd gone out to get Bucky. The way Tony had very pointedly disappeared when Steve carried Bucky up to the medbay and the rest of the team had dispersed. Something which no one had failed to notice. Steve is going to have to talk to him, and he has a feeling it won't be a pleasant conversation. But at the moment, Steve is so very tired. And even though he doesn't actually expect to find Tony in the penthouse, it feels wrong to go lay down in the bed that he and Tony are supposed to share when there is so much hanging unsaid between them. Sam's suite is on the same floor as Steve's, so he follows Steve out of the elevator. Steve is grateful, far more than he can verbalize, for everything Sam has done and continues to do for him. But at the moment, He is tired and aching down to his soul. So when they reach the door to his suite, he quietly but firmly says goodbye to Sam and closes the door behind him. Steve isn't even entirely sure how he finds the bed, but that's where he ends up, shoes kicked off and stripped down to his underwear as he collapses onto the sheets. The room seems to spin slightly around him, and he closes his eyes, rolling over onto his stomach to bury his face in the pillow. The pillow smells wrong. Steve's pretty sure he doesn't actually sleep, but he floats there, in limbo, for an indeterminate amount of time. His mind won't be quiet. Images of Tony and Bucky blurring together and layering over with a wash of blood and hazy memories of the Brooklyn that no longer exists. There's a persistent, nagging wrongness, like an itch just under his skin that he wouldn't be able to scratch even if he could bring himself to move. The bed is too small, and yet, at the same time, it's too big. Steve has a blanket pulled up over his shoulders, but he's still cold. Everything feels wrong. Eventually, Steve gives up and rolls onto his back, staring exhaustedly at the shadows on the ceiling. "What time is it?" he asks aloud, clearing his voice when his throat cracks.
"It is 3:22 p.m.
Jarvis helpfully supplies, and Steve groans, pulling the pillow over his face for a moment before shoving it away again. "Where's Tony?" Steve asks, because he can't ignore the irritation scratching at the back of his mind anymore, and he knows he isn't going to be able to sleep until it's dealt with.
"He is presently in the workshop,"
Jarvis answers. And there's a faint note in Jarvis's tone that almost sounds like disapproval and makes Steve's heart sink. "How long has he been down there?" Steve guesses.
"Since your return with Sergeant Barnes last night."
Steve sighs and levers himself up from the bed. He grabs his clothes and redresses, running a hand through his hair and thinking distractedly that he probably needs a shower, but it'll have to wait. When he arrives in the workshop, it looks the same as it always does. Wires, tools, and half-finished pieces of whatever are strewn on every workbench, and at least three half-disassembled cars sit in the open space beyond the workbenches. Tony is slumped at the desk where he usually sits to do his most lengthy coding, holographic interfaces floating around him. But he doesn't seem to actually be working on any of them. And there's a bottle of scotch at his elbow. Steve finds himself feeling unsurprised and a little guilty. He notes with some relief that the bottle is still mostly full, but Tony's posture is stiff, and even though he's clearly aware of Steve's presence, Tony doesn't acknowledge him. It stops Steve short. He can't bring himself to actually cross the workshop, to actually approach Tony, which leaves him hovering awkwardly halfway there. He feels wrong-footed somehow. The dazed exhaustion he's been stuck in is finally fading, but in its wake he finds confusion, hurt, and the edge of what might become anger. He knows there's a lot of things he and Tony probably should have talked about before now, but it isn't like they didn't know this change, this event in their lives was coming. They'd all been working to find Bucky to bring him home, which Steve is immeasurably grateful for, even if he knows some of the team were doing it more to protect the world from Bucky than to protect Bucky from the world. But this is what they've been working toward, and honestly, it came about in a better best-case scenario than Steve had actually dared to hope for. So why is Tony acting like Steve has somehow fucked everything up and pissed him off? Distantly, Steve realizes that he's planted his feet firmly, shoulder width apart,
his shoulders squared and his arms crossed over his chest. In the silence that stretches between them, as Tony continues not to acknowledge him, the little ember of uncertain anger in Steve's chest begins to bubble up rapidly. And even as Steve half-heartedly reminds himself that this is not the way to promote healthy communication in a relationship, the anger threatens to boil over into rage. But it's Tony who breaks the silence first. And it isn't anger that colors his voice. It's self-deprecating resignation. "I should have known better," Tony says, a rough edge to his voice, and an unsteady jerk to his hand as he reaches out and pours a good measure of the scotch into the tumbler he's holding. "Ted did warn me, after all." And as fast as it came, Steve's anger is gone. He isn't sure if it's the tone in Tony's voice or the way Tony's hand is shaking, as much from exhaustion as the alcohol, Steve guesses, or the mention of Howard. Most likely it's a combination of all three, and it finally sinks home to Steve that Tony isn't just in some weird funk, but that something is seriously wrong here. No conversation between them that involves Howard ever goes well. "Tony," Steve starts. He takes a tentative step forward, because he isn't sure where this is going, but the several feet of workshop floor between them feels like a chasm. And Steve irrationally feels like if he doesn't cross it somehow, he's going to completely fall apart. "You know what he said to me once?" Tony asks, cutting Steve off brutally. He looks up for the first time, meeting Steve's eyes. And Steve is shocked by the too bright, too sharp look in Tony's eyes. "Dad," he said, "it wasn't the plane that killed him. It was losing Bucky Barnes." Tony laughs, dry and rough and absolutely lacking in humor. "How could I ever compete with that?" The other shoe drops, and in one sickening swoop, Steve puts it all together. "I don't want you to compete with him," he blurts, like he's not even saying the words, like they've been yanked out through his chest to hang there between them, without Steve having a choice in the matter. The words are instinctive, and it takes Steve a minute to realize that they don't entirely make sense. "I don't want to break up with you." Tony blinks as he sets the bottle back down, so hard it almost cracks against the surface of the desk. Steve can only watch dumbly as Tony takes a breath, so deep that his entire back flexes and expands with the force of it before Tony finally looks at him again. "You don't have to let me down easy," Tony says. Like he's the one letting Steve down easy. And like he didn't just hear anything that Steve had said. "I saw your face when he looked at him." Steve is tired. And he hurts. And he realizes now that Tony is doing what Tony always does when he feels emotionally vulnerable. Tony is trying to cut his losses and run. Tony is trying to withdraw into his shell of metaphorical armor and hide, because it's easier to hurt himself than to let someone else hurt him. And Steve just can't. "Maybe you should try looking at my face now," Steve retorts. And it's acerbic. He doesn't want to be here. He doesn't want to be doing this. He wants to crawl in bed and hold Tony tight and sleep for a week. Tony doesn't answer, and Steve closes the gap between them in three impatient strides. He grabs Tony's chair and turns him around, hands braced on the arms of the chair and looming over Tony, pinning him in place. Tony makes a sound that is half indignant and half warning, his whole body bristling tense and ready for a fight. But Steve doesn't have the energy for a fight, so he pins Tony down and kisses him instead. He ignores the bite of scotch on Tony's breath and the stiffness in Tony's body
and holds the kiss until attention starts to drain out of Tony and he starts to kiss back. And then Tony's hand is fisted in Steve's shirt, and he's pushing into Steve's touch with a sort of desperation, and the knot of fear and uncertainty in Steve's chest starts to unwind just a little. They're both breathing hard when they finally break apart. Despite the strain, leaning over Tony in the chair puts in his back, Steve can't bring himself to actually stop touching Tony. So instead of pulling away, he rests their foreheads together. Tony's eyes are closed, his swollen lips parted as he catches his breath. And the thought of losing this, of losing Tony, is like a knife in Steve's gut. "Come to bed," Steve says, his voice little more than a whisper in the space between their lips. He can see Tony rallying, see Tony pulling together some kind of off-putting sexual joke. "Not for sex," Steve adds, before Tony can get the breath to actually say it. "Neither of us are in the right state of mind for that right now. But neither of us have slept, and I..." He pauses, his voice cracking. And maybe he would be embarrassed about that, but he needs Tony to understand how very much Steve does not want to give him up. "I need to hold you for a while. Just... please." Tony falters, unbalanced by the raw honesty in Steve's voice, then nods. "Yeah, okay," he agrees quietly. "Sleep sounds good." They make it up to the penthouse without another word. Steve keeps a loose hand around Tony's wrist, unable to make himself let go. And as they stumble for the bed, they undress each other, practiced enough to do it in perfect, silent tandem. They fall into the sheets that are soft and clean and perfect, and Steve wraps himself around Tony like a life raft. He presses his chest against the length of Tony's back, tangling their legs together and securing an arm around Tony's ribs, high enough that his fingers can brush against the hard edge of the arc reactor. With a sigh of relief that feels as though it originates in his toes, Steve lets himself sink into the mattress, nosing at the soft curls of Tony's hair, and finally, he feels as though he can breathe again. Tony doesn't resist, loose and pliant in Steve's grasp. And Steve knows they still have a hell of a lot of talking to do. But sleep is dragging at both of them, and Steve is relieved to just give into it and let things be simple and safe and right. Just for a little while. Steve wakes to the sound of his phone going off. It isn't the Avengers alert, so he wakes groggy and dazed rather than snapping to attention. Tony is a warm, loose weight against Steve's back, which turns out to be a goddamn miracle as Steve squints at the clock and realizes that they've been asleep for almost 12 hours. Steve fumbles for his phone, noting that it's Sam who's calling before lifting it to his ear.
Hey,
he answers, clearing his throat to force the roughness of sleep from his voice.
Sorry to wake you, man, Sam says, but it looks like Bucky's waking up and I figured you want to know.
Steve sits up sharply.
What? I thought you were keeping him sedated.
Tony grumbles in protest at Steve's sudden movement, but his eyes open sharply as he processes Steve's words and immediately guesses at the correct context.
We were. Steve can practically hear the shrug in Sam's voice. But he started showing signs of increased brain activity, and the doctors figured if he's ready to wake up, we might as well let him. You should get down here, though. We figure yours is the first face he should see.
Yeah, I'm on my way, Steve agrees, already kicking off the blankets and reaching for his pants. He hangs up, tosses his phone distractedly back on the bed, and pulls his pants on in one smooth motion. His shirt and shoes take a little more effort to find, having been discarded near the door, and then he has to backtrack to retrieve his phone. Tony is sitting up in the bed, the arc reactor glowing in the muted light of the room and casting Tony's face in sharp relief. The blankets are pooled around his waist, and his body is still a loose sprawl, but there's something a little too sharp in his gaze, and it makes Steve pause. "I have to be there for him," Steve says quietly, and he won't apologize for that. But he still aches to reach out for Tony, to pull him close and kiss that expression off of his face. "Yeah, you do," Tony agrees. And even though his voice is mostly lacking in inflection, at least the resignation and tightly contained distance of earlier is gone. Steve can't resist, and he leans across the bed, bracing his hands on the mattress to press a chaste but insistent kiss on Tony's lips. "We'll talk more later," he says, hating a little bit that it comes out like a question. "Yeah," Tony agrees again. A little too easily, a little too casually. But he catches Steve by the hair, pulling him in for another kiss, holding it just a moment longer before pushing him away. "Go, I'm fine." Steve nods reluctantly, but he can't wait anymore. Spurred by the thought of Bucky waking up alone, surrounded by strangers, he makes it back to the medbay in record time. When he arrives, Sam and Bruce are hovering outside of Bucky's room, watching him through the clear glass wall. Bucky looks much the same as Steve had last seen him, except that his right hand is twitching occasionally, and his eyes are moving rapidly behind his eyelids as he rises back towards consciousness. Steve still isn't entirely sure he's ready to face whatever is about to happen, but he certainly feels much more prepared for it after getting some rest and clearing at least some of the air with Tony. "Do we have a plan?" he asks, as he comes to a halt next to Bruce and Sam. Sam shrugs. "You be there when he wakes up, and we'll see what happens," he answers. His eyes can't seem to stay away from Bucky, darting back to him warily, even as he tries to look at Steve. "The scans we did show what's probably some scar tissue around the hippocampus, cortical regions, and frontal lobe," Bruce adds helpfully. At Steve's raised eyebrow, he adds, "Those areas of the brain are associated with memory storage and retrieval. We can probably expect some sort of persistent memory difficulties, but there's no way to predict how much or what it will affect, really." Steve nods grimly, but before any of them can say anything else, Bucky groans, his head rolling to the side. "Better get in there," Sam says, but Steve is already moving. The door to Bucky's room opens soundlessly for Steve, thanks to Jarvis, as he approaches, and his first step into the room is almost like hitting the ice all over again. He freezes just inside the door, his chest seizing up as he watches Bucky's eyes blink slowly and groggily open. Bucky makes a low, pained sound. He blinks again, a deep crease settling between his eyebrows as he frowns vaguely at the ceiling. Steve unfreezes all at once, quickly moving to the side of the bed. "Bucky?" he asks. He hates the uncertainty in his own voice. Hates that he doesn't know if his friend will recognize him, or even try to kill him again. There's about half a second lag, and then Bucky focuses on Steve. The frown disappears, and Bucky smiles at Steve. It isn't quite the look of utter relief Bucky had given him on the street. This time the relief is more of an undertone beneath open delight, but his expression is bright and loose. "Hey there, punk," Bucky says, his voice raspy but so achingly familiar that Steve's legs go out from under him, and he sinks into the chair left at Bucky's bedside. "Hey," Steve answers, blinking hard against the tears that suddenly threaten at the corner of his eyes. "How are you feeling?" Bucky shifts a little in the bed, as though trying to figure out how to answer, before settling on,
fuzzy. A little sore. What the hell kind of drugs do they have me on? Steve smiles a little. The good ones. Bucky barks at a laugh that's burned so deeply into Steve's heart that it makes his chest ache. Steve reaches out impulsively, unable to help himself, and rests a hand on Bucky's forearm. It's the metal one, and Steve can feel the plates shift and tighten under his hand. Bucky starts a little and blinks down at the arm, the crease of confusion briefly reappearing between his eyes. Inwardly, Steve panics, trying to brace himself for any of a thousand different reactions Bucky might have. But after a moment, Bucky just sighs and slumps back against the pillows. "Guess I got shipped out, huh?" he says quietly. Steve swallows, unsure how to answer. But Bucky continues before he can figure it out. "I don't remember any of it. The war. Is that normal?" "There was a..." Steve fumbles, brain scrambling. "What was it Bruce had said? Something about the hippocampus? Would those words even mean anything to Bucky?" "There was some damage to your head," he tries, watching Bucky closely, waiting for Bucky to panic, waiting for something. But Bucky just nods, his eyes flicking vaguely around the room. "At least tell me I got to punch some Nazis first," Bucky says after a moment. "Yeah," Steve answers, unable to resist a slight grin. "He really gave him hell." Bucky gives a small, approving snort. "Good," he mutters. "Serves those bastards right." "Maybe it's the drugs," Steve thinks, keeping Bucky calm. "Maybe he hasn't completely shaken off the sedatives yet." Bucky remains loose-limbed and relaxed in the bed, his head angled towards Steve, though his eyes keep flicking distractedly around the room, and he seems pretty alert, all things considered. Steve glances toward the glass wall, half hoping for some backup. It's opaque on this side, becoming a two-way mirror, and Steve wonders distantly if it's always been that way, or if someone had the presence of mind to darken it to reduce the things Bucky might freak out about when he woke up. Steve knows, on some instinctual level, that even though he can't see them, Sam and Bruce are still out there watching. They don't come in to offer any help, though, so Steve focuses back on Bucky, taking a deep breath. "Hey, Buck," Steve says, as casually as he can. Steve's heart is pounding in his chest, and he's sure Bucky can hear it. He can't look at Bucky, can't meet his eyes. He doesn't understand why he's so terrified of how Bucky will answer him. Bucky clearly recognizes Steve and knows his own identity, so that's the worst-case scenario ruled out. "Can you tell me the last thing you remember?" Steve keeps his eyes locked on his own hand, starkly pale against the gray metal of Bucky's arm, nearly holding his breath as he waits for Bucky's answer. Bucky's quiet for a long time. "Can't say exactly," he says eventually. "I remember going through basic, getting pulled aside for sniper training. Hey, I told you about that, right? Wasn't much to it, you know? A little bit on camouflage and testing and how far we could shoot. Wasn't sure if I'd actually get to use any of it, you know? But I guess the knuckleheads on Capitol Hill decided to put us to work after all." Bucky lapses back into thoughtful silence, then shrugs. "I was hoping to get a furlough in time to check out that Stark Expo I read about in the papers." "You did," Steve says, because he doesn't know how else to react. Quickly, he files away everything Bucky had said, slotting the memories into a mental timeline. "You found his dates, and we went, you and I, right before you shipped out." "Shame I can't remember it now," Bucky laments. "I bet it was keen."
Bucky shifts slightly on the bed, and Steve watches as his eyes begin to droop. Steve swallows, and he can't resist reaching out to brush a strand of hair back from Bucky's face. Bucky flinches very slightly from the brush of Steve's finger against his cheek. But then he frowns, as though surprised and confused by his own reaction. "You should get some more rest, Buck," Steve says gently, withdrawing his hand and pretending Bucky's flinch hadn't pierced him like a knife. Bucky nods distractedly, and his eyes slide closed. To Steve, the rest of the day passes in a blur of fits and starts. Bucky sleeps on and off. The third time Bucky wakes up, Sam insists he tries drinking some chicken broth. Bucky finishes the broth easily and moves on to some mashed potatoes with enthusiasm. The fourth time Bucky wakes up, he asks about his parents, and Steve has to tell him, haltingly and regretfully, that they're gone. Bucky goes quiet for a while after that. But by the next time he wakes up, Sam has brought some oatmeal and a banana for him to eat, and he becomes utterly distracted by how completely bizarre the banana tastes. Sometime in the late afternoon, it occurs to Bucky to ask what year it is and how much of his memory is missing, which makes Steve freeze again. He doesn't know how to answer, doesn't know how to explain Hydra and the Winter Soldier, and more importantly, isn't sure if he should. Bruce, who has been asking Bucky cognition questions and running him through simple coordination exercises, glances at Steve and gives him a confirming nod. "He'll have to find out sometime," Bruce points out, and Steve takes a bracing breath. "It's 2016, Steve says, and is utterly unsurprised by Bucky's incredulous retort. "You're shitting me." Steve shakes his head, grimacing slightly as he tries to figure out how to explain. "You and I, we were frozen, sort of, for most of the 20th century. Steve skims over Hydra and the Winter Soldier purposefully. Maybe someday he'll have to tell Bucky the whole story, but right now he can't bear to. Not when everything is going so unexpectedly well. Bucky contemplates that for a moment. "Like Buck Rogers," he says, and a slow grin spreads across his face. "I always thought it'd be cool to be in a comic strip." Steve snorts a little, but nods. "Yeah, sort of like Buck Rogers," he agrees. Bucky sits up straighter, his eyes sparking with excitement. "Hey, Steve," he says, and the slow grin has blossomed into something almost blinding. "We're in the future! Are there flying cars? And jetpacks? And robots?" Steve can't resist the naked delight and excitement in Bucky's expression. It's infectious, and something he had never really gotten to feel himself. He'd woken from the ice and found himself lost, alone, and grieving. While he'd adapted pretty quickly to the future, and there were certainly a lot of positive improvements to be found, he'd never really stopped to experience any amazement about it. Steve's lips twitch, and then laughter bubbles up unexpectedly in his chest. "You know what? There actually are," he says. "Not quite like the comics in our day imagine them, but yeah, I can show you some later." Bucky's enthusiasm for science and the future carries them through the rest of the afternoon as he peppers Steve with questions. Bucky finally quiets over dinner, rice and some plain chicken. At first, it's the usual quiet of people eating. But as Steve sets aside his empty plate, he realizes that Bucky isn't just quiet. He's watching Steve with a serious, contemplative expression.
What? Steve asks, flushing a little under Bucky's scrutiny. Bucky fidgets slightly, setting his own mostly empty plate aside. It's just... Bucky falters. There's a crease between his eyebrows, and his eyes keep darting shiftily around the room. Steve's stomach swoops in anxious anticipation, but he relaxes again as Bucky's frown disappears into a slightly bemused smile.
I miss you. That's weird, isn't it? I mean, you're right here, and I don't actually remember any of the time we were separated, but I just...
No, it's not weird. Steve smiles slightly, hoping that it doesn't actually look as brittle around the edges as he feels. He reaches out and squeezes Bucky's hand.
I miss you too.
Bucky lets out a shaky breath that's almost a laugh. His eyes flick around the room once more, scanning the windows and doors. Then he leans in and presses a chaste kiss to Steve's lips. The kiss is brief, little more than a brush of lips against lips, before Bucky is pulling back again, eyes sweeping toward the door yet again just to be sure they weren't caught. For a second, Steve thinks wildly that his ribcage has been pulled straight out of his chest. The overwhelming rush of feelings, grief, relief, passion, loss, hunger, need, that Bucky's kiss, brief and chaste as it was, sparked in him, is quickly chased by an uncertain lurch of guilt. Bucky doesn't seem to notice, leaning back on his pillows with a self-satisfied smirk and an echo of Steve's hungry desire in his eyes.
Soon as I'm sprung from this place, we can reacquaint ourselves properly, Bucky says, his voice low and suggestive in a way that makes Steve's stomach tighten and his breath catch.
For a minute, the heady rush of want and the visceral realization that he has Bucky back overwhelms Steve, and all he can do is grin dopily at Bucky. Then he is brought back to reality with a sickening crash as Tony pushes his way into the room.